play-by-play man Bob Kessling. Bob, tough day for Vol Nation. Thank you for the time.
No, you're welcome, Barry. Good to talk to you guys.
Good to talk with you. We were talking with Mike Heath earlier, and he talked about how skilled you were as a spotter and how John Ward depended on the spotter quite a bit. Do you remember the first time you did that for him, the first game?
Yeah, it was an orange and white game, and he ran me through. He wanted to know if I could do it. One of the things, you know, I had started working on the network when I was in college, and I met Ernie Robertson, who was in charge of the photography department at UT, and they did the coaches show. And he and John, you know, back with the old Bill Battle show, they were pretty revolutionary back in the early 70s in terms of slow-mo and a bunch of stuff. I mean, they had slow-mo down before even some of the networks had figured it out. So they were well ahead of their time in their coaches show, because the games weren't on television, so they put a lot of work into showing all the plays and replays and all that kind of stuff. So Ernie enlisted me to be the film editor, which meant every time they stopped the camera, it put a flash frame in the game film, and my job was to take a pair of scissors and cut that flash frame out and then glue the film back together. I got paid $15 a game, and Ward said I was overpaid. And but by gosh, I was going to be the best film editor in the SEC. And I think John saw that my passion for it, and I wanted to do, you know, because I couldn't watch the games, because I got to watch the first quarter. Then I took the film over to start getting that process. And so I would listen to the rest of the final three quarters. I'd listen to the game on the radio, and I was watching as I was splicing the film. So that's when I got my appreciation for how good John Ward was. And then when I got a chance to go to the WIVK radio to work, still as I was in school as well, then John hired me on as his spotter. And so I stayed there for like 15 years until I went to Jefferson Pilot. And I had a chance to go to some small schools to do play-by-play, but I thought I'd learn more just sitting next to John and learning how to do the games. And that's what I did, and it paid off big dividends. And I kind of relate it to, it's like some up-and-coming painter sitting next to Picasso as he's, you know, painting stuff. That's kind of the way it was. You just saw what a master of the craft he was, and I just soaked up. I was like a sponge. I tried to soak up as much of it as I could.
What was it like to be his spotter?
Well, it was intense. I mean, because he was intense during the game.
Yeah.
And so what he wanted you to do was to make sure that you helped him know who was in the backfield. And he had thumbtacks on this board, and you had to get the thumbtacks right. So I broke off all my fingernails trying to pull those thumbtacks out. But he wanted to know who the quarterback was and who was the tailback in the game. And so then once you got that set for him, he was good with the – and, you know, back then they weren't running 4 and 5 wide receivers and backs in on every play. Basically, you put Herschel Walker out there or Haskell Standback out there as your tailback, and he was your tailback the whole game. So it was a little bit different then. So I basically took care of the defense and tried to help him on who made the tackle, and he took care of the offense, and that's kind of the way we did it. But he had trust in me because I took it so seriously, and that was he wanted everybody in the booth to take it seriously. And I remember when we would go in there and, you know, people would be a big game against Alabama or Georgia or something like that. And he would tell us, he would lecture us every game, I don't want you guys hyped up and excited. I want you prepared. You better be prepared. And it didn't matter whether you were playing UTEP or Alabama. He wanted the same type of intensity. And the other thing he did that was kind of different was as the games, more and more games got on television, we had a monitor in the booth. But he made us turn it off. He said, I don't want you guys watching TV during the game. I want you concentrating on what's going on the field. And we're radio guys first. We got to get it right the first time. So concentrate. Don't rely on having a TV there to back you up. Get it right the first time. So he kept you on your toes, that's for sure. And he allowed you some freedom. And he would give you a chance to do different things. But don't make a mistake. And especially don't make a careless mistake or a mistake that you weren't prepared. Because you weren't going to get a second or third. Well, you might get a second chance. You weren't going to get a third chance if you screwed up. So he demanded perfection, and he demanded intensity in that broadcast booth.
Bob, we were discussing this earlier, and just it, Brent's probably been around you maybe more than the other two of us, and I've had the pleasure of being around you a few times, and Don as well, but you followed that guy. I can't imagine the pressure. I can't imagine how hard that was. And I'll say this, and again, I don't know you as well as Brent, and maybe not as well as Don. I don't know of anybody who could have handled a situation like that more graciously or more professionally than you've done, but I can't imagine how hard that was for you.
Well, I appreciate that. And, you know, the one thing, I knew the university, you know, I played, however briefly it was, football there, graduated from there. So, you know, it was my school. And when they called, and Coach Dickey called me after John's last basketball game, you know, that was a hard thing to turn down. And everybody says, well, you need to be the next guy. You don't want to be the guy that follows. You want to be the one after that. Well, you know, this job only opens up about every 30 years or so. So, you know, if you wanted to do it, you had to take that opportunity. To be honest with you, I was flattered that they even considered me for it, that they thought I could do it. And but if it wasn't for the training I got under John Ward, I wouldn't have been prepared to do it. You know, when I took the job at Jefferson Pilot and left the network in 92 to do SEC games, John called me, and it was funny. You know, he had nicknames for everybody. And if you had a nickname, that meant he liked you. So he always called me Kiesling. He never called me by my right name. And he was always Warped. So he would go, he called me one day and he goes, Kiesling, Warped. You're getting ready to take this. Yeah, that's the way you do it. He goes, you're getting ready to take this Jefferson Pilot game gig, right? And I said, yeah, I think I'm going to do that. Well, that's good. That's a good move for you. He said, do me a favor. Don't use all those hokey and cornball expressions I use on these broadcasts. We don't need another John Ward. We need the first Bob Kiesling.
Oh, wow. Man. Wow.
And then he hung up on me.
It's the first mic drop in history.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, he relished being able to hang the phone up. In mid-sentence, he would hang the phone off of, and he knew if that was right, it was good. He would pay us, you know, he was really so much fun off the away. You know, his broadcast, he was so intense. But away from that, he was really a funny guy. And so we got paid through his production company. You know, he was in advertising. That's where he made his money. He did broadcasting as a hobby. But he would pay us. And you never knew when you were going to get paid or really how much you were going to get paid. You just knew that eventually you were going to get a paycheck. So you get a check, you know, in the second week of the season, and it'd be for $543.21, you know, 5-4-3-2-1. And then in 2 weeks after that, you get a check for $123.45.
And so 1-2-3-4-5.
Yeah, that's right.
That's really funny.
He always kept you on your toes. And Brent, you were around. You know, he always kept you on your toes, and he was always razor sharp, and he was amazing. You know, another thing he did that I thought was really neat, and some people thought it was kind of strange when he would do it, he would carry a satchel of 8x10 photos of himself around with him when he'd go to different places. Because what would happen, people would come up. People would come up and they want his autograph, but they might not have anything for him to write on. So they'd bring up a napkin or a popcorn box or something like that. And Ward would go, no, 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 that's not good enough. And he would reach in his satchel because he wanted them to have something to remember the experience by. And so he'd bring out this 8x10 glossy and he'd sign it, personalize it, and give it to the person. And there have been so many people that have called today and say, he did that for us, and I've still got the picture in my room, or I've got it in my office, or something like that, because that's part of his advertising background and marketing and all that. I mean, he built that relationship with that fan, and that fan then was a John Ward fan the rest of his life. And that's kind of the way he did it. He was a master at that.
Bob, I'm curious. Mickey mentioned the transition. That you followed John Ward. I'm curious how much thought you gave going into that first season. How much of John Ward am I going to use? How much of Bob Kiesling am I going to use? I love the advice from him. We don't need another John Ward. We need the first Bob Kiesling. But I'm curious how much thought you gave to that.
Oh, a lot. And I'll tell you, my dad told me a great story that helped me with that. And it was about this old man that was taking some material to the next town and didn't have a truck. He just had a donkey. And so he put the material on the back of the donkey and went down the path, and a little boy wanted to go with him. So the little boy, they were going down the path together. The little boy gets tired. Old man puts the little boy on the back of the donkey. They go down the path. And then this guy comes the other way and says, little boy, I can't believe you're making that old man walk. So the little boy gets down and the old man gets on the donkey. And then they go down the path and some guy comes the other way. So, old man, I can't believe you're riding on the back of the donkey and making that poor little boy walk. So the old man picks up the little boy and they go back on the donkey and go down the path. Then another guy comes the other way and said, old man, little boy, I can't believe you guys are riding on the back of that donkey. And, cause it's broken down donkey and you guys, that's just not right. So, they said, yeah. So the old man and the little boy get off the donkey, and they start carrying the donkey. And they get across this bridge, and they lose their grip, and they drop the donkey in the river. And my dad says, you know what the moral of the story is? I said, I really don't have any idea. He said, he goes, the moral of the story is, if you try and please everybody, you're going to lose your ass. And he said, so you need to go out there and you need to be Bob Kessling and you don't need to be John Ward. And I thought, that makes a lot of sense. So that's what I've tried to do. And, and John, I'll give John credit. When the change was made, I mean, John wasn't, and he's never really very public. He wasn't when he was doing the games, but right. He wasn't doing interviews and he you hardly ever saw him. And that made the transition for me a lot better. I will tell you, I was going to do my first game, and I was nervous. I'm thinking, just like you were saying, Brent, what the heck have I gotten myself into? I'm trying to replace John Ward. How stupid is that? What do I think I'm doing here? And so I'm walking to the first game. We're playing Wyoming, and so I'm going to the stadium, and I get there by the volunteer statue, and I'm going down Peyton Manning Pass, and I'm thinking, well, I'm in a brave new world, and what am I doing? So this ice truck comes around the corner, and there's this guy sitting in the back of the ice truck taking the ice to Neyland Stadium, and he sees me, and he says, yells out, hey, Bob, good luck tonight. Don't embarrass us. Okay. Thanks, pal. I appreciate that. So anyway, thanks a lot. So that kind of broke the ice a little bit. But, no, it was, if it would have been any other school except Tennessee, I probably would have stayed what I was doing, but when just the chance to pick up where John had left off of the Ball Network, and I'd had a relationship. Lindsey Nelson, he moved back to Knoxville. I got to know him. George Mooney moved back to Knoxville. In fact, he was staying in the same assisted living facility that my mom was. So I'd see George all the time. So I had a great relationship with all these ball announcers, and just the fact that I had a chance to join that fraternity, it was just too good to be to turn down. But I would not have gotten the opportunity if I hadn't listened and watched and fed off what John Ward did in his brilliant career. And, guys, he was brilliant. And I think the more you listen to his calls, his brilliance comes through. He wasn't a yeller and he wasn't a screamer, but he knew the dramatic moment and he knew how to use the exact phrasing and the exact word. And that's a gift. And he had a wonderful gift and a complete control of the English language. And he just was very eloquent in how he did things.
Well, we appreciate the time, Bob. I know you've had a lot of requests, and we certainly appreciate your perspective.
Hey, guys, it's always good to talk to you. Thanks for having me on. I'll talk to you soon.
Bob Kessling, Tennessee play-by-play man, 20 years.
I still call the 11 a.m. SEC game the JP game.
I know.
Until the day I die.
Oh,
that's the JP game.